Welcome this afternoon. This is the House Committee on Revenue. It's a couple of minutes past 1 o'clock. This is May 23rd, and the subcommittee of the committee will include Representatives Olson and Boquist and Representative Berger and myself. Today we are scheduled for public hearings and possible work sessions on four Senate bills, 267 through 270. We're honored to have today to testify on behalf of each one of these bills Judge Henry Breithoff from the Court of Appeals, and let's go ahead and get started. Paul, do you want to give us a flavor of what we're doing today, please?
Okay. Mr. Chair, you're correct. You have four bills that have been brought to you from the tax court. The first is Senate Bill 267, which established a jurisdiction for the tax court to determine the real market value of specially assessed property. And it says that for tax purposes, it's based on the evidence before the court without regard to value pleaded by the parties. In other words, it gives the court some additional flexibility in dealing with these value questions.
Okay. Judge Breithoff, thank you for coming. We welcome you. You have testimony on all four of these bills. Let me just, for the record, go ahead and make sure that the record now shows that we have a committee available for voting purposes with five of the nine members. So please proceed, Judge.
Thank you very much, Chairman Butler, and let me congratulate you on your pronunciation of my name. You did a very good job with a very difficult name. And let me congratulate you on having a name that I can pronounce without any difficulty.
Thank you, Judge Breithoff.
Senate Bill 267, we have submitted some material. I'm not going to reread that, but I will just explain the following. In 1995, the legislature created the Magistrate Division of the Oregon Tax Court and really moved the first level hearing process from the Department of Revenue, where it had been on the executive side, over to the judicial branch and created the Magistrate Division. At the same time, and that division was created to offer relatively inexpensive, relatively user-free dispute resolution. That has worked out, I think, as the legislature intended.
Relatively expensive or inexpensive?
Inexpensive, yes.
Okay.
A $25 filing fee, no requirement, very liberal representation requirements, no formal record.
A lot of pro se, and I think, according to your testimony.
Very high level of pro se appearance. And I should say, I think at this point, over 90% of the cases that come to that division, and all cases with very few exceptions must start there, are resolved and never go further, even though either party could, if they were dissatisfied with the decision, come to the regular division where I'm the judge. So that the record, I think, is abundantly clear that the division is doing what the legislature hoped that it would do in resolving tax disputes.
So the first level of dispute on a tax matter then could be after the audit and some discussion at that particular point, then could move directly then to the magistrate court and then to the appeals.
To the regular division.
Regular
court. Which starts a new case. If parties are dissatisfied with what occurs at the magistrate division, technically a new case is begun in my court.
So it's de novo at that
point. It's de novo at that point. And at that point, we make a record. We apply the Oregon Rules of Evidence. We apply a more, somewhat more strict set of procedural rules, and render a decision which is then appealable directly to the Oregon Supreme Court. Now, in the process of creating the Magistrate Division in 1995, a number of what I will call, and I think the research demonstrates this, editorial changes were made. Prior to that, Oregon had a statute which said that the tax court could find value in valuation controversies, whether specially assessed or regular property. In valuation controversies, the tax court could find a value as supported by the evidence, regardless of what the parties had pleaded. So to use an example, a simple one, taxpayer says the property is worth $100, Department of Revenue says it's worth $200. What if the evidence shows that the property is worth 75. Is the taxpayer entitled to 75, or are they stuck with their pleading of 100? And it could go the other way. Before 1995, the statute said the tax court can find in accordance with the evidence, regardless of those pleading limits. In the process of the 1995 legislation, I believe, and I don't think anyone has found otherwise, that that statute was inadvertently repealed. What 267 does is bring the words of that statute back into the law to permit the court to do that in situations where the evidence warrants it. So it's really a return to the pre-95 status for the law. And it is very similar to authority which the court has on the income tax side, where the statutes indicate that the court is authorized to find the correct amount of tax regardless of what the parties have pleaded. So that is 267, and I would be glad at this time to answer any questions that the committee may have.
Thank you, Judge Brighton. Are there questions for the Honorable Judge? Colleagues, we're in a public hearing on 267, Senate Bill 267. Any further discussion on 267? Okay. I just want to make sure that I understand from the auditor and supervisor in a case dealing with real property value, and that would be at the local level. Then it moves to the magistrate, and then when you say to the regular court de novo, the regular court, is that the circuit courts? Is that what that is?
No, the regular division of the Oregon Tax Court.
Okay, so I see.
Yeah, there is one court in Oregon that deals with statewide tax matters, and that is the Oregon Tax Court. It has two divisions, really, and we call them upstairs and downstairs because we're in two different floors in one building. So the taxpayer starts at the magistrate division, and in over 90% of the cases, the matter is resolved adequately. If there is still dissatisfaction on either side, then the parties come upstairs, pay a $50 filing fee, and have a trial de novo.
And so the magistrate for real property has worked out very well, and the majority of the cases are resolved there, and then still fairly inexpensively it can move to the regular tax court and be heard at that point.
But that's right. Literally, citizens can go through both divisions of the Oregon Tax Court for a total fee cost of $75, and that compares, I think, very favorably with the basic filing fee in a circuit court, which I believe is in excess of $150. So we're the low-price alternative.
Yeah, $100 of that, I think, goes to mediation for divorces, too, the rest of it. So. Any other questions of Judge Brighthoff? Colleagues, let's close the public hearing on Senate Bill 267 and open a work session on 267. Representative Berger?
Mr. Chair, I move Senate Bill 267 to the floor with a due pass recommendation.
You've heard the motion. Any discussion on the motion? Any objection to the motion? Hearing and seeing none, so ordered. Representative Berger? Consent calendar?
It's fine with me.
Any objection to this moving to the consent calendar?
That's almost like a motion.
Hearing,
it's a motion to send it to the consent
calendar. Motion of Representative Berger is that this move to the consent calendar.
I knew I knew that.
And is there any objection to that? Hearing and seeing none, so ordered. Thank you very much. We will move that to consent calendar of the House with a due pass. Thank you. We'll close the work session on 267. Open the public hearing on 268. Senate Bill 268. Let's get some staff here. Judge Brighthoff and then Rome.
Yes,
Mr. Chair, Senate Bill 268 is the second in the series of bills that came from the Oregon Tax Court. What the bill does is eliminates the statute that refers to the tax court procedure for small claims. And the Senate discussed this issue discussed the alternatives and how this actually works in practice. But I'll allow Judge Brighthoff to discuss that. We also have, with Senate Bill 268, a -1 amendment. And that -1 amendment comes to you through Representative Krupp. in working with, particularly with Marion County, and it deals with the appeals process and the timing of the appeals process for centrally assessed property, primarily industrial property. It grew out of some cases that we've had recently in Marion County involving the food processor. So it, the dash ones are designed to clarify and speed up the process that we have now.
Thank you, Paul. Let's see, Paul, can you give us a feel as to whether or not we'd ought to lunge into this or the Senate bill as previously passed, or should we just start in with the amendment from President Trump?
Mr. Chair, I think it would be helpful to discuss the bill as it came to you from the Senate.
Okay.
And discuss what that issue is, and then go to the dash one, which is a separate issue.
Excellent. Judge Breithoff, would you like to go ahead and start off, and then we'll come back to Representative Krupp, recognizing that Representative Krupp is here.
Yes, thank you, Mr. Chairman, members of the committee. 268, and I'm glad we had an opportunity to talk in some general terms about the structure of the court and some of the costs and style involved, because this bill really relates directly to that. Again, I have to take you back to the period prior to the time that the magistrate division was formed. In those days, taxpayers ended up with their first level of hearing at the Department of Revenue. And only then, after that level of hearing, did they come over to the judicial branch, to what was then just the regular division of the tax court. The legislature, which had created the tax court in 1961, I think correctly realized, well, many cases are small in amount, and they're limited in their legal significance. Shouldn't there be a small claims division? And in 1961, a small claims division was part of the court. In 1995, what the legislature said was, let's move the initial hearing process from the Department of Revenue to the court. Let's also make sure that it remains easily accessible, inexpensive, and hopefully dispositive. And that has proven true. The highest fee one is required to pay for the magistrate division services is $25. Broad representation, no record kept, strict rules of evidence don't apply. Over 90% of the cases disposed of. What we have found is that when taxpayers are offered an opportunity of paying $25 or alternatively still electing small claims at $10, they naturally, in many cases, check the $10 box. Unfortunately, the statute on what qualifies as a small claim is not the easiest statute in the world to read. For example, there's a dollar amount on income tax cases, but do you count the interest and penalties or just the tax? And it's this kind of difficulty which has led the court and the magistrates to say the difficulty for taxpayers complying and getting to the right section, magistrate division or small claims section, is simply too much danger that they'll get to the wrong place and potentially be adversely impacted. For the difference between a $10 fee and a $25 fee, let's realize that the magistrate division has, in effect, provided the easiest alternative available, and we ought to have just one of those. Let people come, pay $25, have a very accessible form of dispute resolution, and by the way, have an appeal if they don't like what happens. Currently, if a taxpayer elects small claims and loses, that's it, no appeal. So this was, after 7 years of experience with the new system, really a judgment on our part and a request for the legislature to consider, on the one hand, a slightly increased fee, on the other hand, a simplified system, easier for everyone to comply with, and with the ability, if the taxpayer wishes to appeal. And I really speak now just to the main bill as it came to you. I think I'm prepared to answer questions on the Dash 1 amendments if you have them, but for ease of discussion, I think I'll stop there.
Thank you, Judge. Questions as to the main body of the bill, Judge Breithoff, Representative Berger is recognized.
Just so there's a clear understanding, what this bill does then is take away that on these tax magistrate issues, takes away the small claims option.
Right.
It doesn't change the price of anything. It
Well, the only price it changes is instead of having the ability to get a small claims hearing for $10, the only option now will be a magistrate hearing for $25.
All right, Judge. Hypothetically, I think the state's done me some wrong in my taxes. I go down and say, I want my money, or I want my day in court, or something, and I show up, I think it's a small claim because it may be small to the state, but it's big to me. How will I know where to go? Who's going to tell me whether I go down to my circuit court and file at a small claim window, or I go to you?
Under current practice?
Mm-hmm. How am I going to know as somebody who's never entered the system before?
That's right. This is a problem with which we struggle daily. And we really work with between two principles. One is a principle, and I'm speaking now about the tax court.
Mm-hmm.
First of all, your issue will have arisen because of some action of a taxing agency, either the Department of Revenue or a county board of equalization, a board of property tax appeals as to property tax. And I believe in all such cases, the statutes now require those agencies to provide a statement of appeal rights at the bottom of the letter that you get. Let's just take an income tax matter.
Mm-hmm.
You've had a discussion with the auditor. You've not been able to resolve matters. The auditor says, we're going to write up the tax assessment. You say, fine. Well, maybe not fine, but I understand.
Fine is what I'm saying.
That's right. Do what you have to do. Okay. And they do. And the next thing you get is a letter from the Department of Revenue which says, we are assessing additional tax of $250 against you. At the bottom of that letter, there is a notice that within a certain period of time, you need to file, if you disagree, you need to file an appeal with the Oregon Tax Court. At that point, you would either, assuming again, and I think it's a good hypothetical, that you're not practiced in these matters,
right.
You could go online to our website, and you could see a handbook on how to file an appeal. You could see forms. You could call the court and have that handbook or those forms or the rules of the court sent to you. The difficulty we're talking about here is this. Employees of the court are not permitted to give you legal advice. So when you get your form under current law, there's a box for $10 and there's a box for $25.
I'd go 10 every time.
Right. But you might also say, gee, do I qualify for small claims? And you might be asking that of a staff person, and the staff person would have to tell you, I can't give you legal advice as to whether you have a small claims proceeding. Please read the booklet. Please read the rules. At that point, in our experience, I'll be very honest with you, you would be frustrated. You would say, I don't do this every day. What happens if I don't get the right? What if I choose $10 and I should have chosen $25? I will tell you we have not yet had to cross that bridge, but part of the reason for this bill is I don't ever want to have to rule on a case where a taxpayer gets bounced because they chose the wrong box over $15, which is one of the reasons the bill is here.
Just removes that small claims option.
Mm-hmm. Removes the small claims option, but very importantly, the small claims reality, which is easy to get to the magistrate division, very broad representation. You can have your accountant, real estate broker, licensed tax return preparer, easy representation rules, easy procedural rules,
Plus an appeal right.
Plus an appeal right. We thought, and that's the reason we asked for the bill to be prepared, we think that's a good trade. I think it will simplify the hypothetical Representative Berger problem. It'll simplify our life, and I think it will be a... It will not be a revenue enhancement.
Thank you, Judge Breyer. Further questions for the judge relative to the underlying bill? Representative Krupp. Another case.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. For a moment there, I thought I was in the Senate, which is the place I don't want to be right now. For the record, I'm State Representative Jeff Krupp, House District 17. The Dash One really is the outgrowth of conversations that I've had with my county tax assessor, Doug Ebner, who's in the room here, and I would ask to join me, and also Karen Gregory from the Department of Revenue. I had, as NORPAC is the food processor that really has highlighted the, I guess is the poster child of why we needed to make some reforms. And they, of course, are in my legislative district, primarily. They're headquartered there. They have facilities all over the state. They went through about a six-year process of appealing property taxes. And the outcome of that was that they were successful in the appeal, and the state was not. And the ultimate result of that circumstance was that interest of 12% a year on the appeal was granted, and and added to the refund of the property taxes. And what that really meant to me at the local level was, as the chairman, or not chairman, but a member of the Sublimity Rural Fire District Board, we got a notice from the Department of Revenue, or actually rather from my friend and neighbor, by the way. He lives literally right across the road from me. I can't get away with anything. The tax assessor said, you know, it's going to cost your fire district about $10,000 next year. And we've never received a penny from NORPAC's property tax assessments because they don't have any facilities in our fire district. That simple. And this is the law that's been in place, and appropriately so, that says if these circumstances evolve, that all of the taxing districts within that county have to bear part of the burden, which is precisely what's occurred. Well, that didn't make a lot of my fellow board members very happy, and a few other taxing districts around the county. So in chatting with Doug across the fence, we sort of talked about how we might try to remedy this, and I introduced a bill early in the session that said that the Department of Revenue would be responsible for this to finalize these claims in 12 months, and if they didn't, then they were responsible for any penalties that were ensuing out of that. Well, obviously, that was a bit on the aggressive side. We all sat down together and talked about this and came up with some solutions within the department, which they are adopting by rule, and the Dash 1. And what we're saying here in the Dash 1, it's sort of Section 13, frankly, lays out the premise of what we're trying to achieve here. And basically, it's stating a number of things. Is that appeals on the value of property and secondary industrial property can have a substantial impact on services with tax refunds. Sub C talks about that the citizens are best served by the efficient resolution of property tax appeals related to these properties. Sub 2 talks about resolving the appeals related quickly and efficiently as possible to reduce the financial impacts of a lengthy appeal process. So what we're saying here is we're clearly establishing what the intent here of what we're trying to do, what the department's trying to do, what the tax courts agreed to do, what we've all agreed to do to streamline this process so that we don't drag these things out for 5 or 6 years again in the future to substantial detriment. Now, why is this important? Well, we've probably, for the food processing industry, we've probably fixed this problem for the food processing industry. But what about other industries that may have substantial impacts? Semiconductor industries, others in this state, where we could see this issue replayed over again. And that's why I think it's important that we adopt this, the Dash 1, because it also says that the Department of Revenue will adopt rules relating to this that will promote the objectives of a quick and efficient resolution of those appeals. Section 15 talks about consolidating various claims together, which was one of the problems that we had in the NORPAC circumstance, to try to consolidate them, to make everything move more quickly through the process. And as you go down the rest of the amendments, under sub B, the department of, and the county assessor shall both remain parties to the proceedings described here. Mm-hmm. So what it means is that everyone's going to stay involved in the process to again try to seek a speedy resolution to these issues. That's why I got involved in this, and I want to thank the Department of Revenue and the tax court, and certainly the county assessors, and Mr. Ebner is the, I guess, the president of the county assessors association, so he speaks with a voice for them also. Again, this is a compromise ideas that we're bringing forth here. I think they're appropriate, and I would urge you to adopt the Dash 1 amendment. Thank you.
Thank you, Representative Cruz. Other questions? I beg your pardon. I did it again.
He's much better looking than I am, but thank you anyway.
Thank you, Representative Krupp. Representative Krupp, are there questions for Representative Krupp?
Yes.
I just had one quick question, and that is the department is going to adopt the necessary findings along the lines that you've laid out. And what's going to make certain that these get done any faster than what they have been done in the past, Representative Krupp?
Great question, Mr. Chairman. Two things. First of all, is I have the department's word that they will adopt these rules. Number one, and since we're putting that on the record, and the department is here, and I am quite confident that Karen Gregory will agree to it. She will also probably share with you that they are in fact engaged in rulemaking processes right now to make changes within the Department of Revenue to help resolve these in a speedy manner. That's the first point. The second point is I'm going to be looking over their shoulder.
That's scary.
I likely will be back to this process, and if this isn't resolved, my bill will come forward once again, and we'll make it resolved. That simple.
Okay. Other questions for, I'm sorry, Representative Berger?
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Representative Krupp, and I guess this also is for Doug, if this had been on the books 10 years ago when we started down this road, what would have gone differently than actually transpired in the NORPAC case?
Well, Mr. Chair and Representative, or Vice Chair Berger, I'll let Doug answer that question. I think he's far more
Doug,
qualified.
Doug, here and sign in, please. Go ahead.
My name is Doug Ebner. I'm the Marion County Assessor and also President of the Assessor Association. My belief is when I looked at NORPAC appeals, we wanted to just focus on that. 5 years ago, when that came up, the request was a 50% reduction because the economy on canneries just went down the tube. In my looking around at other canneries within Marion County, it seemed like operating canneries were selling for about 50 cents on the dollar. If the cannery was totally closed, they were selling for about 30 cents on the dollar. So I called up Revenue and asked, you know, is there any way to settle these things as quickly as possible? And they felt in NORPAC situation that they could defend it at that point in time. Since then, they called me up 5 years later and said, well, we finally settled NORPAC at 50 cents on the dollar. One thing this bill does is it gives the assessor some say in the process. So we never had that say before. I check with legal counsel and say, how can I do anything? Because we settle. Our BOPTA appeals used to be 3,500, measure 5 and 50 were really good and cut us down to 350. We just had a meeting this morning, we're down to 85. Because we take a very active interest, and if we are wrong and our value was wrong, then let's stipulate and get it settled. Let's go down the road and save everybody money. This process will help that. And what I found is one of the assessors called me last week and to tell you if it works or not. And he said, I got an email from the Department of Revenue. We got an appeal over here, and they're asking me what I think. And how do I know? I don't deal with resaw lumber mills. I mean, how would I know what to do with that? And I said, well, what it's really telling me, Tim, is that it's working. Revenue was actually already, before the bill ever goes in, asking your opinion. And he said, well, I don't know. And I said, well, ask them. Ask them what they have to defend the value. You know how appraisal works. So what do they have to defend the value, and what does the taxpayer have? Gather the facts, and based on those facts, you make an opinion. We spent $1.2 million on NORPAC in interest, on interest that don't go to the taxing districts. It's not just NORPAC. We had Quest Communications with telecommunications. We just settled that. That was another million something in refund. We've had numerous other ones. Last week, I got notified that we have a new one over Mount Angel and Mount Angel Beverage. We have $11 million on that. They're saying it's worth 5.5. So I don't know how many years that's going to go back. We're just getting into that one. But these are the kind of things that we want to settle and get out of our process. I think we could have settled NORPAC 5 years ago and dealt with the refund and never had to do any refund, just settled with the value back then, not had to deal with the $1.1 million in interest. So I think this opens the door. I want to warn you, this is only the beginning. We're going to meet during the interim. Revenue's already been doing that on administrative rules of how to fix some things within their process to speed up the process. And we want to come back, perhaps with legislation in the 07-08 legislative session, to put a final cap to this process and make it whole.
Thank you.
Chair.
Representative Hass.
Thank you. Was NORPAC paying its property tax bills all up, right up until the end?
Please?
Was NORPAC paying? Was it current on its property tax?
Correct. And even if they're paying or not paying, and some people say, well, if they never paid it, you're not losing nothing. Well, the district's counting on that money somewhere down the road, so they are losing the money. So
right.
Either way, they're losing the money. So we, in the last, every month we pay out payments to them on money that came in, and we don't pay anything out lately because there's no money to give them to pay out because it all went away in refunds. So hopefully this will fix it. We met with the mayors and some of the city managers along with Department of Revenue, and some of them were unhappy because why am I, and I think Jeff alluded to it, why am I in Sublimity Fire District having to pay a refund for something that's got nothing to do with my district? And the reason why is because, and the mayor from Turner asked me that question, and I said, what would you do if we would have built the power plant in Turner and put it on the roll for $300 million? And what would have happened if 3 years down the line it wasn't needed? And they filed an appeal and said it's only worth $100 million. And you alone had to send a refund back on $200 million for 3 years. Turner would be gone. Because of the unsegregated tax account, we all share in that back history refund to allow everybody to exist. Okay. So it cost all taxing districts 2% because of all of the appeals we had on refunds. Where if it would have been just Dayton in one district, would have been devastating for them to pay refunds.
Is that the unsegregated tax account? Is that the way every county does it?
Right. And that's on appeals. Now, we have a meeting with assessors with the Department of Revenue coming up on Wednesday, and I have a meeting with all the taxing districts of Marion County and all the cities from Polk and Yamhill who will be meeting. And hopefully Jeff will show up part of that to talk to the taxing districts, not just show them how to do a budget, but show them how the tax system works and the importance of an unsegregated tax account and communicate that with them. Because one thing what we've learned in this process is that I can't be an island, neither can Magistrate of Revenue. We have to be communicating with the taxing districts and the people and the public and communicating. One thing we got beat up on is why didn't anybody tell me that NORPAC was out there, that it could have affected this way? Well, certain information is confidential when it's tied up in the court that you can share. I mean, you're limited. I get emails from revenue, but it's all confidential information you can't share. So how do we do that? Well, hopefully with the task and we can figure that out and communicate statewide.
Doug, let me just ask this question to make sure that I understand how local governments are going to be able to drive this process, because I am concerned about that, having seen this firsthand as a county commissioner. I don't know that I share your optimism, and we'll get Karen Gregory up here in just a moment, but I don't know that I share your optimism that it drives it quite as fast as you're telling it does. It looks like that on the face page, lines 18, 19, 20 through 22, that strongly encourage taxpayers and the local governments to resolve the appeals related to the values on these properties in order to reduce the fiscal impact, the financial impact of the lengthy appeals process. This is sounding like, and then coming over to page 2, lines 23 through 30, and line 1 on page 3, that the department shall respond to only those allegations that relate to the appraisal and assessment performed by the department, and the county assessor shall respond to only those allegations that relate to the appraisal and assessment performed by the county assessor. And these are centrally assessed properties, I understand. So then what's going to happen on lines 29, 30, and over on line 1 is the department and the county assessor shall both remain parties to the proceeding described in the subsection unless either party is dismissed by an order of the court. Now, nowhere do I read that in there that this is going to speed this process along, other than the fact that maybe at some point, if you can get the Department of Revenue dismissed. And there's a lot of times we'd like to have done that, I think, on things like this, but for their own action, they've said, no, we think that we've got a real good case, but you ought to hang in there. I personally, if you wanted to talk to me about it, I personally would take it out of their budget. But that isn't an option here today. I guess what I'm saying is, I don't know that I share your optimism that makes this case go from 5 years to 4 years to 3 years to 2 years. Can you help me with that? I'm really struggling, Ben.
I share your concern, truly. The concern I have is that we have to start someplace, and we were limited amount of time to put this thing together. I think this is a good start. I think there's a certain amount of trust. I feel comfortable that Department of Revenue is committed. And the one thing I feel good about is the assessor now has a say into the process. And if I have a say into the process, and if I would have had that same say 5 years ago, NORPAC would have been settled 5 years ago, and we wouldn't be sitting here today. But my optimism, I can stipulate. I can say, in my opinion, now, however I read this, I do have a say.
Okay.
And if I agree that NORPAC should have been settled 5 years ago at 50%, it would have been, and we would have been down the road. And it would have met your needs and my needs. So
okay,
I do have that say now.
But Doug, tell me about what weight that say is when you've got the department saying, listen, we've got a lot of people that are up here that don't have anything better to do than to fight this case. Now, I'm still anxious about if they want to drag it on an extra year, then feel like that there's some more things that they'd like to inject. And of course, all of this time we're hoping the economy just catches on fire and goes, and then NORPAC will look back and say, see, it was undervalued all this time.
Yeah. I think it comes down to some trust.
Okay.
Is what I look at. And I think that as long as I have you people here and your people are going to be back here, hopefully next session, and I said we're going to come back next session with some closure to this, if I come back next session and revenue told me, nope, we're not going to settle or whatever, and there's a conflict in there, then maybe we go back to what you said, that revenue pays a refund, because I'm the one that pays the refund now. I paid out of a taxing district's money, but then Jeff called me up and said, what the hell's going on? Why aren't we getting this money? And to me, meeting with the taxing district, we've been proactive. That's by Thursday we're going to have that meeting. Here's how it works. I need you guys to be involved in the process. I would have had him here today, but this happened so quickly before my meeting, to support this process. I think the League of Oregon Cities and Associated Oregon Counties are really a part of this and the Board of Commissioners. So I'm hoping they all pull in and that we all make it happen.
Well, I realize that there's a lot of trust involved in this whole process. And it's based upon trust, and it's basically an agreement to agree. I'm going to tell you that the judge is going to tell you how much of value an agreement to agree is really worth. He's going to tell you it's probably not worth a lot because it's unenforceable.
Go ahead, Judge.
Mr. Chairman, I feel that it's appropriate for me to say something at this point, because in the discussions that occurred, really at the behest of Representative Kropp, I believe, we at the tax court were happy to be the host of those talks. And we participated in those talks. That is to say, the presiding magistrate, Magistrate Tanner and myself, Mr. Ebner was there, Karen Gregory and the director of the department, representative of the taxpayers, sort of a traditional taxpayers lawyer who sure. was there. And we talked about this. I agree with you that this is not mandatory language. What I heard, and I'll just testify to this, what I heard is, as Mr. Ebner has said, and I think Ms. Gregory would share, was an honest discussion about how to solve this problem. Our part, in addition to playing host, somebody looked at the court and said, what can you do? And I said, well, you want me to do something? And the reason I said that is these cases were all cases that settled. They didn't go to trial. And there were extensions granted at the request of both parties. And I said, we can hold trials more quickly. What I committed to and what we will do at the tax court is to make sure that we identify these cases, that we tag them, and that I can't speak for any successor of mine, but while I'm on board, the presiding magistrate and myself, we will make sure that the first discussion in those cases has to do with, is the communication system open? That is, does everybody know that this case is here, what it might involve, and are people talking? And so I will commit to do that. It will not take you away from what you perceive, which is this is not mandatory language. What we hope to do at the court is to make sure that the discussion that has occurred continues. We don't have a particular dog in the fight, but we do have, and the legislation recognizes, we have a role, and we're prepared to fulfill that role in terms of making sure everybody remembers what they vote for.
And Judge Breithaupt, while we invite Karen Gregory to come up and Doug, if you'll provide room for her there, had you not become involved, you're fine there, Judge, had you not become involved, Judge Breithaupt, and a good legislator come and get your ear and get these folks to the table, how much longer could this case have gone on, unresolved, in your opinion?
Well, let me say, it could, with the exception of Measure 5 appeals and Measure 50 appeals, where there is a statutory directive for prompt adjudication, which I take very seriously, I, and I believe the magistrates, look to the parties. And where the parties are in agreement that more time is needed to work. These are, let's take Norfolk, was not a simple valuation question. And the court certainly hasn't heard evidence, so it's not in a position to judge that. So if we have two parties that come and say we need more time, we are operating in good faith, and no one sends a signal that that's anything except fair and honest, we tend to provide the time for the parties. So the answer to your question would have been if both parties had continued to come and say we need more time to work it out, I would have tended to provide more rope.
And I guess, Judge, if I thought I had a really, really good case, if I was John Q. Norpak, thought I had a really, really good case and continued to pay my taxes, and if I, again, as John Q. Norpak, said, you know what, I'm probably only making ROI of about 2% on my money in the Norpak business, and I can make 12% from a governmental entity over here, why wouldn't I just say, could you give me another five-year extension of time? I mean, it looks like to me that this thing, the checks and balances on this thing may be out of balance.
Well, Mr. Chairman, I would agree with you on the hypothetical, depending on where the market rate of return is, but certainly, as I understand it, the interest rates here could be attractive. But I would expect that at some point, and what I would be looking for as a judge in the middle is some pushback from the other side saying, no, we're not going. We want to go to trial.
But I realize this legislation involves now the county, and that's been an important element in this process, because when it only involved the Department of Revenue, they had nothing at stake, did they? They really didn't have a dog in the fight other than the fact that they could just continue to roll the thing along. Or am I missing something here?
I am, given my position, I am a little reluctant to
speak
for Ms. Gregory.
Okay, we'll let her do that.
I believe they do, in a larger sense, have an interest, but I would prefer, and I say that as a commentator who practiced in this area and now is...
And I'm sorry, I didn't mean to try and expect that from you.
No, that's fine, but I would defer to Ms. Gregory to describe the interest that they see.
Please, Karen.
Thank you, Mr. Chair, members of the committee. For the record, I'm Karen Gregory. I'm the property tax administrator at the Department of Revenue. And as far as the interest of the department, we do have quite a bit at stake, Mr. Chair. First of all, we have over 3,000 accounts that we value on an annual basis. We have a very limited number of staff. So that in and of itself, we really cannot maintain a number of these cases going on through magistrate or the tax court at any one time because it's simply so staff intensive. The other piece to that is, of course, that the department also pays the Department of Justice attorney costs, which is also no small matter in these cases because when you do go to magistrate or tax court, it takes a very long period of time. The other piece, too, is that the department is really interested, by and large, in settling cases. And we take, whenever an appeal is filed, from the minute the appeal is filed by the taxpayer, the first thing we do is start working towards settlement. And we continue working towards settlement, even up to and through the tax court. So what we have done with the process that Representative Krupp has helped us get in place. As Judge Breitoff said, we had a lot of folks coming to the table, and it also included Department of Justice. I don't know how often that has occurred in the past, but I would suggest that having the tax court and the chief magistrate, as well as Department of Revenue, the counties, and the Department of Justice all surrounding a table and saying, how can we more expeditiously come to a conclusion on getting these appeals moved through so that we don't have another case like NORPAC? That was a pretty big deal. And the work was done very quickly, and because Representative Krupp was very forceful in what he wanted, not only did everybody at the table certainly understand his concern, but that's where the amendment came. And there was a piece that we were able to put together that will allow us to expeditiously make one thing happen now, and that's bringing all pieces together to one forum. The other thing that the assessors and the department are working on is a timeline from the time the appeal is actually turned in to whatever entity you were appealing to, all the way through till the end. And there are times in there when the assessors and the county commissioners are all informed and are part of the partnership in moving this forward. Administrative rules will be developed from that process. And as Mr. Ebner said, we're having a meeting on Wednesday, I think, with the assessors, and that's the first time for the assessors to take a look at the timeline and have input into it. So the process is moving. I think what you will see as you come back in 2 years, you will have legislation before you that will, I hope, ask you to do some things to help with interest, possibly, some of these time frames that we're talking about. Because we are taking a look at the property tax system, we being the Department of Revenue, the assessors, county commissioners will be brought into the conversation. Associated Oregon Counties has already participated somewhat in the conversation, and you will hear more about this as time goes on. This is not something that we're going to let go by the wayside. Representative Krupp will be looking over our shoulder, but the assessors, we have 36 county assessors, and they're quite involved in this process and will continue to be so.
Thank you, Ms. Gregory. I still can't get over how much this appears to be an agreement to agree and almost wholly unenforceable. My counsel to the assessors in this regard, and Doug, I know that you represent in your association those assessors, my counsel to the assessors, and you, Representative Krupp, where you still have a finger in the dike now in Ways and Means, would be that you assessors come forward with some sort of a timeline in this process, and on a case-by-case weighted dollar amounts in this process, make certain that what happens is that the Department of Justice fees are graduating downwards on a case-by-case basis, so that pretty soon Department of Justice comes back and says, wait a minute, we've appealed this thing so many times that we don't have any more money available for this dollar amount of this particular case. Guess we'll have to have you settle it at that point. So can you kind of consider that as a possibility in the Ways and Means process as a suggestion, maybe as a follow-up piece of legislation, as a way to get this really resolved and not just an agreement to agree when we're going to stop these kinds of things? As we know, Representative Berger carried a bill today on the assisted living and the low-income housing. And that's been going on. They wanted the statute of limitations opened back up to 1989 on that. And we can't continue to do that. That's 15, 16 years into the tax court process, and that's just too far. And I guess there's, if you said, wait a minute, based upon $100,000, if the amount at stake is $100,000 and we already have $95,000 of DOJ fees in it, at some point the DOJ fees ends up at zero, any further dollar, that way they won't continue to say, we recommend that you maybe string this on a little longer. So figure out what that timeline is, and maybe 100% is absurd, but I guess what I'm saying is figure out a ratio of what you're willing to spend, because pretty soon we're throwing good money after bad, and it is all taxpayers' money, every last dime of it.
Just to respond to those, the comment, I 100% agree. That's why I said we'll be back next session. The important thing to me is is when we have a NORPAC situation. I don't have the expertise to go and testify a NORPAC, and I'm not saying it's beyond just a local issue of Oregon or Marion County. It's a national, it's an international situation with the international market of where you buy your stuff. You can buy it at other countries for a lot cheaper than here, ship it in and have a package. So I don't have the expertise. I'm not necessarily thinking that Department of Revenue has an expertise. My hope is to come back next session and talk about exactly that. Is there another alternative? The unsegregated tax account, since you brought it up, is an account that everybody has money in and everybody has a vested interest in refunds. If I went out as an accounting assessor and told my board of commissioners, I need $50,000 to go out and hire an MAI to come in and take a look at NORPAC and take a look at the cannery industry on an international basis to determine what is that cannery worth, they would say, well, why would we spend $50,000 of our money for the unsegregated tax account? But what if we did something that the assessors were allowed to utilize unsegregated tax account and say, I would have spent $50,000 with an outside agency to take a look at NORPAC, and what if NORPAC would have came back to revenue on us, the fee appraiser, and said, I think a 50% stipulation, you better grab it and run. We would have spent $50,000 on an unsegregated tax account, if I had that authority, and saved $1.2 million in interest. Now, when you talk to the taxing districts, they don't understand that until you really sit down and talk with them and really get them to understand how the process works and why it's important, as we discussed with the power plant in Turner. So Thursday, we're going to jointly meet with the taxing districts to get them to understand that. Somehow there has to be some funds to pay for an outside person, third party, to come in my opinion, and take a look at that value and give the second opinion to both sides of where we go. What if we could have settled at 60% instead of 50% 5 years ago? We all would have been ahead. So that's something you might see next session come up. Too late for this one to get that buy-in, but I think it makes good sense to do something of that nature.
Thank you, Doug. Questions to this panel? I appreciate all the good information, and I really look forward to hearing some kind of a weighted program that you come back with, and the possibility of more than just an allocation from the unsegregated tax account, but some kind of buy-in from the districts to allow you that greater latitude, Doug. I appreciate the testimony of Karen Gregory on behalf of the Department of Revenue on the centrally assessed accounts, and your willingness to continue to work forward, Karen, on this. I look forward to some good progress in the interim, too.
Mr. Chairman, if I may conclude with, for the record, both visually on the camera and on the audio tapes, and if your committee assistant would take note specifically of my next comment, the intention of this agreement is to provide quick and efficient resolution to appeals. That does not mean, for the record, business as usual. It means something less than a 5 or 6 year or 12 or 15 year appeal process on a piece of property. So, for the record, we are saying we intend everyone to work together to dramatically shorten the appeals process.
Equitably, fairly, and justly amongst all the parties. Thank you. No further questions. Thank you very kindly. We appreciate your information on the Dash 1 amendment. We will close the public hearing on Senate Bill 268 and open a work session on Senate Bill 268. Representative Berger.
Mr. Chair, I move the Dash 1 amendments to Senate Bill 268.
The motion is to append the Dash 1 amendment to Senate Bill 268. That amendment is dated 5/23. To your motion.
Well, I, as you have indicated, don't see a lot of, shall we say, requirement in this amendment. But I do think a clear statement needs to be made. This is an issue that is my district abuts Representative Krupps, and I'm well aware of the issues that he's trying to address here. I trust that the parties will take this to, in good spirit, and we will see some positive action. Thank you.
Thank you. Further discussion on the motion. Is there any objection to the motion to append the Dash 1 amendments to Senate Bill 268? Hearing and seeing no objection, so ordered. Representative Berger?
Mr. Chair, I move Senate Bill 268A, or 268 as amended with the Dash 1 to the House floor with a due pass amendment.
Okay.
Or a due pass recommendation.
Due pass recommendation on Senate Bill 268 with the Dash 1 amendment. Any discussion? Any objection to the motion? Hearing and seeing none, so ordered. Representative Berger, would you like to work with Representative
Krupps
on this bill?
The two of us.
I know that this both in your district and that you have a number of people as well as sharing the same tax assessor. So
yeah.
Thank you very much. We will close the work session on Bill 268. And we will open a public hearing on Senate Bill 269. Paul?
Chair, 269 is the third in your series of bills from the Oregon Tax Court. And what it does is eliminate the statutory requirement for taxpayers who are appealing to the tax court to file certified copy of complaints and petitions. This is currently in statute that a certified copy be filed, and the testimony that was heard during the Senate discussion of this, the practice oftentimes is not consistent with this because of taxpayers' lack of knowledge of that.
And there's a number of pro se folks involved in this process, and they to go get certified copies of all these various things that might be somewhat onerous. So. Okay, Judge Breithaupt, thank you again for being here with us.
Thank you, and I can say that compared to the discussion of in the last bill, hopefully this is a house, truly a housekeeping measure. We have seen, and we may be back as well next session, but we have tried to gather together statutory requirements where there is not a There may have been a historical reason for them, but that has long since passed. They now sit as stumbling blocks, especially for pro se litigants, and we can make copies as well as taxpayers and provide copies to the relevant parties. And so we ask to have this taken out of the statute so that we do not run into someone who waives the statute in the court space and says, you must dismiss this complaint. It did not have a certified copy. No one has done that. I will say this. I want to be very clear. It is not as if the opponents are trying to take unfair advantage of this. I simply don't want it laying around as an unfired gun.
Thank you very much, Judge Breithaupt. Questions of Judge Breithaupt or staff in this regard? I only had one question of staff, and that is there were three no votes on the Senate floor. Do you have any idea why these three particular senators thought it was a good idea to mandate certified copies of complaints and petitions?
I don't, Mr. Chair.
I realize that the same ones that are voting no on all of these bills.
I don't know if those are the same ones who are willing to win all the bills, but I don't know why that was true.
All right. Thank you very much. With that, we will close the public hearing on Senate Bill 269 and open the work session on Senate Bill 269. Representative Berger?
Mr. Chair, I move Senate Bill 269 to the floor with a due pass recommendation.
You've heard the motion. Is there any discussion on the motion? Any objection to the motion? Hearing and seeing none, so ordered.
Mr. Chair, can we put it on the consent calendar?
The motion is from Representative Berger to move this to consent calendar. Is there any objection? Hearing and seeing none, so ordered. We will close the work session on Senate Bill 269. We'll open a public hearing on Senate Bill 270. Paul?
Mr. Chair, this is the fourth and final of your bills that came through Senate Revenue Committee and across the Senate floor. from the Oregon Tax Court. It has to do with the rules for selecting a person to represent taxpayers before the tax court to magistrate. What it does is give the magistrate division a broader authority in terms of establishing those rules and to design those rules that would be consistent with the nature and use of the court.
Judge Breithoff.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. As we have noted from the discussion on the other bills, the magistrate division is there to be easily accessible. It already has, by statute, a very broad representation rule that is far beyond attorneys are permitted to appear on behalf of a taxpayer. We have, however, in 7 years of experience, learned that we run into some situations we can't deal with easily under the statute. Primary example being an elderly taxpayer who does not want or cannot afford to have an attorney, and then you say, well, what about an accountant? Same problem. Real estate broker, I don't know one. Who do they want to be with them on that phone call? Largely the work of the court at the magistrate division is on the phone. They want a son or a daughter who may not happen to be an attorney, accountant, real estate broker, licensed tax return preparer. This bill gives the authority to the court to adopt some rules to provide for additional representation. And frankly, I will tell you, the spirit of what we want to do is, on the one hand, make sure representatives know that they're undertaking a serious responsibility, make sure the taxpayers know that representatives will be speaking for them, but to provide, we thought of just listing additional parties, but that becomes fairly difficult, and we would exercise this authority, if you gave it to us, to deal with, for example, family members who show the ability and consent of the taxpayer. Yeah. Show ability and have the consent of the taxpayer to proceed. That's the reason.
Thank you, Judge Berger. Representative Berger is recognized.
Yes, Your Honor. Describe to me by rule how you would get there. If you can't list it in statute, how are you going to list it in rule? Do you understand the question?
Yes. No. It's not that we can't list it in statute. It's just that we felt that having the authority to make a rule and consider the circumstances as we see them developing would be an easier and more flexible way to go. I agree. It doesn't. It provides authority. What we will do is look at, I will tell you, we will look at statistically what are we seeing as the experiences, and the main one is the example I gave you. It's a family member, typically.
Okay.
Not always.
And that's what I guess I'm asking is this, are you generally looking at, or pretty much in most cases looking at, someone who would only trust a family member to speak for them in these cases, and that's what you're really would like to get to?
That's the main problem we've seen. We can imagine, though, there are other circumstances. For example, a charitable organization, a church that comes to the court and has the president of the church council, who, again, is not an attorney, an accountant, a licensed tax return preparer, we would say, and may not be, the statute already permits someone regularly involved in the tax matters of the organization to be the representative. The idea here, and again, let me say to be very clear, this only is relevant with respect to the magistrate division of the court.
Not the court.
Not the court. When I say not the court, not the regular division. In the regular division, one must appear either on one's own as a natural person or through an attorney. This is only at the magistrate easy access section.
That's a reassuring.
Representative Hass is recognized.
Wouldn't it in some ways be more beneficial in your analogies of the lady or the church to say, no, I mean, wouldn't they have more protection if they did have someone who knows what they're doing instead of saying, no, it's okay, you can bring your son in? Wouldn't you be serving them better?
They might have more protection, assuming they actually went, and let's take the example of an attorney. They might have more protection if they had an attorney. The problem is they will not, as a practical matter, they will not go get an attorney, either because they don't know how to find one or they do not believe that they either need or can afford an attorney.
And the amounts could be insignificant.
Well,
it could be very small.
Let me say, again, we're talking at the magistrate division. Now, there's no dollar limit at the magistrate division. You can have a case in the magistrate division that's got $1 million on the table, or you can have one for $100. the experience we've had, and by the way, if you have a $1 million case, I will tell you this bill won't make any difference because everyone will have lawyered up and we will not be dealing with that problem. This is traditionally the problem of the small income tax bill or the small exemption or real value. And if you say to, my experience, and I deal with pro se's even at the regular division, is if you say to somebody, I think you really could benefit from the services of an attorney, they will say, I don't want to do that, or I can't do that. And then you say, what? Now, at my division, I don't have a choice. They have to represent themselves. But the magistrate division, they would be in a position of saying, well, may I have my son help me and appear for me?
Representative Riley.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. I just want to be clear about what it is you're asking for here. And are you asking for ad hoc rulemaking authority on
this? Yes.
Okay. All right.
Well, when I say ad hoc, but no, I should let me, if I may, Mr. Chair, Representative Riley, I would not describe it as ad hoc in the sense of what we are asking for is authority to make rules to describe the kind of additional representatives. And we will take care in those rules, I will tell you for the record, we will take care to make sure that we provide some protection so that we know we're dealing with people who have some ability and, more importantly, people who have the consent of the taxpayer. And we will, by rule and through, we have representatives sign documents already. We will make sure that we're dealing with someone who understands their obligations and is likely to be able to discharge them.
Typically, the tax preparers that you were talking about, the licensed tax consultants under Oregon's tax consulting law, could presently represent
yes.
in that matter.
Yes, currently they would be fine.
And nowhere did you mention the possibility. I've had a number of elderly people in my practice and experience background as an accountant that have come forward and said, I'd like my minister, an elder in my church, to come. There's somebody that's trusted, and they're not going to, you know, they run their own business. They've talked to me about the injustice that's involved here. That would be contemplated in that process?
We would certainly consider that in terms of the rulemaking. Now we're dealing with an interesting question. I would say we would certainly consider that. At that point, I would want, in the rule, to make it clear that we would have to have, I won't say an ironclad, but a very clear statement that the taxpayer understands this representative is going to speak for them.
Okay. Mm-hmm. Representative Olson.
Hey, Your Honor, I can see the reason behind where you're wanting to go with this to kind of streamline things and everything. And apparently, for you to get to this point, you must have experienced a lot of problems with this. I'm just interested in that.
Yeah, the primary problem, and again, I'm speaking now as the judge of the court, I'm the administrative authority. The presiding magistrate is out of town today. But the example I gave is the one that we most often run into. It's either a family where an elderly person really only reposes trust in their son or daughter, and that person is not otherwise qualified, or in some cases where there is a trust and the trustee is the one who wants to appear, but the trustee is not an accountant, attorney, that sort of thing.
Thank you.
Other questions of Judge Brethouse? Okay. We will close the public hearing on Senate Bill 270 and open the work session on Senate Bill 270. Representative Berger?
Mr. Chair, I move Senate Bill 270 to the House floor with a due pass recommendation.
You've heard the motion. Is there any discussion on the motion? Is there any objection to the motion? For the record, Representative Escobal is excused, has stepped out for just a moment. With that, if there's no objection, we will move this to the House with a due pass recommendation. Representative Berger.
We're discussing the consent calendar. I'll move it to the consent calendar.
The motion is to move Senate Bill 270 to the consent calendar. Is there any objection? Discussion? Objection.
Objection?
Any objection? Hearing and seeing none and recognizing Representative Escobal could have objected had he been here, we will excuse him from the vote. However, we will move this to the consent calendar of the House of Representatives due pass. Thank you very much. We will close the work session on Senate Bill 270. And again, Your Honor, Judge Breithaupt, thank you so much for taking your day with us. We know that you've got a lot of other important things to do, but this was very important to have you here.
Thank you very much, Mr. Chairman and members of the committee.
Thank you. With that, we will close our House revenue for the day.
Oh. Thank you.